We are joined this afternoon by Josh Pearson, Indy Next driver and driving in the WEC, just wrapped up Sebring. I know Sebring maybe didn't necessarily go how you wanted it to, but what's Sebring like in a sports car?
First of all, a really disappointing way to start the year, obviously.
Sure.
You know, we started on pole. Ollie did a great job to put us there and had a fantastic lap. So, we got off to a promising start and we had a car that had, a lot of pace, but really disappointed, especially since the issue that we had that ultimately ended our race wasn't something that, I or the team could do anything about. It was unfortunate that, whoever installed the camera, it wasn't properly mounted. And, so honestly, it's one of those things where it's, it's probably a one in a million, that it would end up hitting the fire extinguisher. Really disappointing, but Sebring itself is such a historic track. The place hasn't been repaved, I think since they built it. So, because of that, it has a lot of unique challenges, and the one that of course is talked about the most is the bumps. It makes for a very unique setting and a very unique challenge when it comes to setting up a car, because we, there's a lot that we have to deal with. Obviously, we want the car to be as low as possible, but it's hard to make it that low with the bumps around Sebring, because if you run the car too low, you're constantly bottoming out and ultimately breaking the floor. So it's a big challenge, and for not only the drivers but also the engineers, because the bumps on your body especially, it's very tactile, it's very physical. So you combine all of that mixed with the heat, that it just makes for a very, very difficult and challenging race for not only the car but also for the drivers, and we see that year after year with not only 1,000 miles but also the 12-hour.
So with the incorrect mounted camera, it fell, hit your fire extinguisher, and then what happened? Did the fire extinguisher actually go off? Because I don't actually remember hearing about it too much during the race, other than I think they played a radio transmission of what happened, but that's all I can remember.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what radio transmission they would have had, because so it's a very interesting situation. The Orca chassis, and this isn't something that, Orca themselves would be responsible for, because the camera is not theirs and they didn't mount it. But we have, it actually stems from an issue that we've had in the past. So we do have United themselves will go over, we have like a document slide, pre-race notes. And in the slides, there's some tools for the marshals on the outside of the car. And one of those is a neutral button, which we've had in the past. We've had debris hit the neutral button, which shuts the car down completely and puts it in neutral. And that's so the marshals can move the car. If it's stopped in gear, they can hit the neutral button and it'll be able for them to move it. So in the past, we've had that happen last year with Phil at Le Mans, where some debris hit that button and shut the whole car off. But if that's the case, there's a little red light that'll illuminate in the dash. And then as a driver, you need to figure out which button it is and push it to unactivate and get back in. That light wasn't illuminated for me, so I knew that wasn't the issue, but I still felt the left side, which you can feel without having to get out. Yeah. That's why I opened the door, is I was feeling that button. And that was fine. So I immediately knew it wasn't one of the buttons. The next thing that I checked was the headrest, because the headrest actually has it's a lock-in system, but if the lock comes undone, for whatever reason, that can shut the power off to the car. So I checked that, the headrest was locked in place, so I knew it wasn't those two things. So my last kind of, I've never had, we go over the fire extinguisher, but not in this scenario. For me, I figured that I didn't really go to the fire extinguisher in my head, because I was thinking it had something to do with the camera itself, since the camera runs off of the car. And it's a live onboard camera for WEC. I figured that, with the camera flying around in the car, and it's a big camera, I figured that one of the cables or something that had power to the car had shorted, and it had somehow shorted power to the car. So I don't really know entirely, because when the car shut down, I think the only radio transmission they would have had for me would have been, I have no power, because that's the first thing I said.
Yep. I think it was something simple like that we heard.
That was the only comment I was able to make before the whole thing completely shut down. And it's not Orca's fault. So we're the team, we're investigating how we can stop it in the future, but essentially next to the neutral buttons on the outside of the car, there's two fire extinguishers. Obviously there's one fire extinguisher in the car, but there's two handles on the outside of the car that the marshals can pull. So it didn't hit the one for the driver that's on the dash. What it hit is those two handles on the outside can actually be engaged from the inside of the car. So if you, I didn't know this, but we know now, if you hit it hard enough from the inside, there's like an extension of where you can see where the cable is. If you hit that from the inside of the car, it'll actually pull the cable out on the outside. And even if the fire extinguisher cable gets pulled slightly out of place, the entire ignition, the power, everything shuts off. So the onboard camera, when it was flying around, it just so happened to perfectly hit the extinguisher cord, which from the inside pulled the extinguisher out on the outside and ultimately shut the whole car down. So not where my brain first went. The really sad part is if I had gotten out of the car, which WEC does allow, the only rule that they don't allow is they don't allow you to have marshal help. So if I had gotten out of the car, all I would have had to have done to restart it is push the fire extinguisher cord back in, and then power would have been enabled to the whole car. But it's one of those things where your brain doesn't go there. And also, even when I have the door open,
Sure.
it's man, it's I have so much respect for Phil at Le Mans for getting out and hitting the neutral button, because it's scary when you're stopped on track, and you're like, man, I should get out and look, but cars are flying past you so quickly, and it's scary to get out. So and we did, that was what happened, is when I got the car back to the garage, one of the mechanics pushed it in and it fired right up. And I got to pit lane and jumped out. But the problem is they wouldn't let us go back out because I had marshal help to get back to the pit lane. So it's such a freak accident. And it's really unfortunate because, everyone worked really, really hard. And
Sure, sure.
we had a 45-second lead. We were way in the lead. We had a huge gap. And it was just a perfect storm of things that went wrong. And I know what to do now, obviously. And the team, we're going to look at some ways that we can try and negate the issue. But really, really unfortunate. And I mean, there's no telling. I don't know. Somebody said the fire extinguisher went off in actuality, but I don't know what happened entirely, because
Sure.
I would have seen something in the car, like foam or something. But that wasn't the case, so it's possible that it tripped it a little bit. So they were weighing the fire extinguisher. But when I get here for the when I see them tonight, I'm gonna have to ask if the fire extinguisher was weighed and if it was lighter. But somebody said that it actually went off, so I'm not sure they would have let us run anyways if it had actually gone off. So
Yeah, I think I heard
a
that
bit
later on
unfortunate.
the broadcast, but I don't remember. But anyway, so kind of taking a step back from WEC, and for those who don't know, you were the youngest race winner last year at Sebring, I think it was. But how did you first get into racing and start racing, and how did you get to the point where you're like, all right, I'm gonna run WEC, I'm gonna run Indy next, work my way up kind of almost on two different continents at once. How did that kind of career path go?
So it actually stems from, I think part of a lot of motor racing stems from connections, and it's not really, it's more who do you know, right?
Sure.
And building those connections from a young age, and for any young driver, I think is important. And it's not terribly difficult to find a lot of these people, considering racing is a very, very small world. A lot of the time you can find a driver that you would have never talked to, that's worked with an engineer you work with, and that's part of the reason I think it's really important to be sociable around the paddock and be well liked in the paddock, because everyone knows someone. So if one person happens to not like you, that could potentially influence an entire team to not sign you. So it's racing is such a small world that I think it's very important to have a good connection with everyone in the paddock, or try to. Obviously, it's not possible for everyone to like you, but try to be as friendly as you can in the paddock with everyone. And in general, everyone that you meet is really nice and lovely to work with. So my driver coach, Steven Simpson, for a short but long story, started working with me in 2020 when I was still on the road to Indy in USF 2000. Obviously, my whole life I've wanted to race IndyCar. That's been my goal, has been to race IndyCar. And so I started out on the road Indy, and Steven Simpson came in as a driver coach because when I started racing cars, I really had no idea what I was doing. Coming from karting, the car world is very different. It drives differently. There's new things you have to worry about. It's not the same thing. And so a lot of the racecraft you learn in karting gets carried over, but in terms of driving style, you kind of have to readapt and rethink how you drive. So, he was brought on, and at St. Pete in 2020, he started working on this crazy idea. And he's like, "Look, I drove this car professionally, and he's like, I think it's a great car to learn and develop. And I think that you do things in sports cars that you wouldn't normally do before getting to IndyCar, such as pit stops, fuel saving, tire management. He's like, all of these things you're going to have to learn when you get to IndyCar, but what better way than to learn them before then, so that by the time you get there, you're ready." And I absolutely agree, and that has been a big part of it. But I thought he was crazy. I when he told me, like, "Let's go run Le Mans," I was like, "Man, you're crazy." And I tell him that all the time. Every time we're at dinner, I always tell him, like, "Man, I thought you were out to lunch. I thought you were crazy." But he definitely, it was very smart, actually. And Steven drove for Richard Dean in junior formula when he was younger. And so that's the connection to United. And that was also my connection to PR1 the first year when I ran IMSA and WEC for both a full season. Kind of taking a step back from junior formula and focusing on what I could do to improve myself in the sports car world, because I think it's such a unique chance to do and to develop. And I think more young drivers should definitely turn to sports car racing, because you're required to have a silver for a lot of the races. So for the IMSA endurance races, which I run with TDS, you're required to have a silver. You're required to have a silver for WEC. And so you look at the big picture, and it's like, you as a silver, you're not really going to be as fast as the platinums or the golds, but you don't have to be. So that makes it a great proving ground and a great learning opportunity. Not only do you get to work with these really, really fast professional drivers that have a lot of experience, but also, you have this kind of added bonus of getting to drive with them, looking at their data, working directly with them. And you don't have the added pressure of having to be as quick as them, because that's not really your role in the team. Obviously, I want to be, and I push to be just as fast as I can every single weekend, because I'm always learning, always improving. But if you come into it for your first year, my first year, I didn't look at it as I want to be as quick as Ollie and I want to be as quick as Alex. I more looked at it as, let me learn from them and have the ultimate goal of being just as quick as them, but also understanding that my role within the team is more to hand the car off to them without damage, to kind of set up a strategy play to win the race. And so when I looked at it that way coming in, I think it took a lot of pressure off of me, but also it gave me the tools to learn and to succeed. And so I think that sports car racing is really important. And I think that, it holds a special place in my heart now, because I've come into it with from a very young age, which most haven't. And tried to absorb as much as I can and learn everything I can. And I've definitely, had the right people around me in Steven Simpson, Richard Dean, Zach Brown, everyone at United, PR1, now TDS. I've had such friendly faces around me and people that have really given me a lot and have helped me to better myself as a driver. So that's really what it's all about. And I think that it's definitely, something that more young drivers should look into. But in terms of, how I got into it, it really all started from just that one comment from Steven at St. Pete, and things kind of developed pretty quickly from there.
You raise an interesting point that I have probably asked.
Hey there, and welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, hosted by me, Minter Dial, a veteran of the paddle tennis world, and sponsored by Paddle 1969. Whether you're a paddle tennis aficionado, just beginning, or have never even heard of paddle, or padel, as it's called in North America, this is an exhilarating new show that delves into the captivating stories of notable paddle personalities worldwide. In its inaugural season, you'll be treated to exclusive anecdotes, valuable tips, life lessons, and humorous moments shared by esteemed professional paddle players, industry insiders, and passionate paddle enthusiasts. With each season aligning with the Pro Tour, you can anticipate two engaging episodes per month. The Joy of Paddle podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, where you can find other great shows in a number of categories, such as sports, health and wellness, true crime, and fiction. To find out more about Evergreen Podcasts, go to www.evergreenpodcast.com. Vamos!
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.
Two dozen or three dozen like road to Indy guys over the years about no pit stops and getting to IndyCar, and you know, how can you simulate or practice a pit stop? And I never once said maybe you guys should try a sports car race or two just so you can get the feel of in laps and out laps and everything like that. So you know, when you hopefully get to IndyCar one day, that experience is actually helpful. Or if you don't get to IndyCar, you're already kind of, you know, you've got that sports car experience at such a young age. Is that also, you know, a dream? Like, hey, you know, maybe if for, you know, whatever crazy reason IndyCar seats dry up, you're happy in sports cars?
Yeah, you know, I don't think that, you know, even if I didn't manage to get an IndyCar seat, which fortunately I'm in a position where I technically have one. So
yeah,
you know, with the Ed Carpenter deal, I'm in a position where I don't think that'll be the case. But you know, if I was in that position and was struggling, you know, I definitely would say that I'd be happy driving sports cars. You know, I love working with the people and having that kind of team atmosphere between, within drivers, which is very different, you know, because in single seater, your teammate is kind of like your worst enemy in a sense, because they're driving a similar car. So, you know, if your teammate can win, technically, so should you. You should also be able to. So it you know, your teammate is almost your worst enemy. Whereas here, you know, your teammate is actually your greatest ally. So it's a huge kind of flip-flop, and I love the team atmosphere. I think it's something different, you know, working with other guys, because you know, you win together, you lose together, and there's kind of a new string of emotions attached with it. It's a whole nother world. You know, I think a lot of motor racing is, you know, the difference between IndyCar, F1 and sports cars. I think all of these categories, you know, all the way from even, you know, V8 supercars in Australia, I think they all have a very different atmosphere to them. And I'd love to experience as much of it as I can, because, you know, every single thing is different. Everything's unique. All these cars have a unique driving style and unique standards. And I think that's part of what makes motorsport such a special sport, is, you know, no two categories are the same. And they all have different principles, different ideas. So it's something, you know, extraordinary, I think, with sports cars, to be working directly with other drivers. And, you know, you realize pretty quickly that some are better at it than others, especially at the coaching aspect, because when you're required to have a silver, you know, you kind of need to do a bit of coaching, because it's in their best interest that I'm as fast as possible. So, and, you know, you see it a lot of time, like with Alex last year, you know, I think he got better at coaching throughout the year. But also it depends on the driver, because certain drivers get coached differently. So, and take after different influences. And Alex, you know, towards the end of the year, realized that he could just be really hard on me, and kind of yell at me in a sense. But, you know, I appreciate that, because if he's pushing me to work hard, then, you know, in turn, I know he's working just as hard. And so is Ollie, and the whole operation runs. But, you know, I think if there's one kink or one gear that's out of place, you know, it stops turning. And I think I think part of what makes it so impressive is that, you know, all these people can work together and the cogs are all there moving. But it so easily can go wrong. And especially when you run the cars for how long we run them for, and as hard as we do, you know, just like Sebring, it's, you know, these one in a million things happen, and it's mind blowing to me, but that's why I love it. That's why I do it. And, you know, that's why I keep coming back ultimately, is to learn and improve. And yeah, I'd totally be happy driving sports cars. Obviously it's not where I'd like to end up. I'd like to end up in IndyCar.
Of course.
And ideally, you know, I'd like to end up in IndyCar, but in a situation like Elio Castroneves is in, or Scott Dixon, where you have a ride for the four long races at IMSA.
Yeah.
And that's kind of part of the other idea of staying in the sports car paddock, is, you know, giving those top tier teams in GTP and HyperCard, you know, an option for a third for IMSA and for some for other events. So you know, I think it's all about connections, but definitely important for me to stay in that paddock. And obviously I'm in a really good spot right now with United and TDS. So yeah, honestly, just trying to stay in it and trying to, you know, keep my head in a level mind after Sebring.
I almost forgot about the Ed Carpenter thing. So, you know, something we don't see very often in IndyCar is, you know, some sort of driver development deal or a reserve driver type opportunity, or at least it's not like public, like F1 is. So how did the opportunity with Ed come about? And, you know, obviously we've only had Sebring, where were we? St. Pete so far on the IndyCar calendar, but do you spend time with the team during the race weekend? You know, how does the kind of at the track aspect of it work too?
Yeah, so obviously a bit of inspiration from Europe, right? In that kind of development driver category, we see it with, you know, Red Bull, Ferrari, Mercedes. But I think it's something that especially is that's not utilized enough in America. So, you know, coming in, it originally started as trying to find a team to run Indy Next with, which at the time was going to be Indy Lights. So, you know, I knew I wanted to get back into the Formula Car paddock and to have my kind of, you know, a foot in the door. And even though I knew I wasn't going to be able to do the full season with the wet commitment, I wanted to be back and learning so that I could, you know, the next year have a good shot at a championship. And so, you know, kind of going around the paddock and speaking to a lot of the teams, the IndyCar teams, you know, they have some incentive to run in the next teams. But, you know, it's expensive to do. And so not a lot of them want to do it. And frankly, I think there should be more incentive because, you know, who wouldn't love to see all of the teams that are on the IndyCar grid, just like
100%.
You know, who wouldn't want to see them all running in Indy next team as well. And I think that that really helps for driver development. So, you know, I spoke with a couple teams and really just a couple people that were interested. And I spoke with Ed Carpenter in Indianapolis at the NASCAR weekend.
Okay. And, yeah.
You know, it was me, my dad, and Steven, and we were looking for teams. And but at the same time, we were also just looking to speak with a lot of the IndyCar teams. And this development kind of driver idea was something that we had petitioned to some people and more about talk to ourselves. And we kind of looked at a bunch of teams on paper and we're like, you know, who would be a good idea to do this kind of deal with? And to me, you know, the standout on that list was Ed Carpenter.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, they're not regarded as one of the top tier teams, but I think they have the potential to be. You know, they're a team that has won races in the past, has very good cars on ovals, and has done their fair share of driver development in the past with, and even in the present with Rinus VK and Joseph Newgarden. So, you know, a really strong team that, you know, I think is right there, you know, close to the big teams, but at the same time has a little bit of development to do. But, you know, I think that's part of what makes it such a good opportunity is by the time I get to IndyCar, you know, racing with Ed Carpenter, it takes a lot of pressure away from me. If I had gone with a team like Andretti, you know, Penske or Chip Ganassi, if you end up with them in their first year of IndyCar, you have a lot of pressure to perform because you're running for a team that, you know, is historically a front running team. So it becomes, you know, I think it this added pressure is almost a hindrance, I think, to you as a driver. You know, I the ideal situation would be to, you know, have a year of learning and a year where mistakes are going to be, you know, noted, but are acceptable. And I think that taking some pressure away removes a lot of those potential mistakes. So I'm really grateful to Ed Carpenter for, you know, thinking about this and actually taking it up and also, you know, doing it in a way that's very unexpected. You know, the information that he provides to me over race weekend and how he helps out it was really, you know, St. Pete was the first time we see it. And, you know, although the Indy Next race didn't end how I wanted it to, you know, I hit the wall, you know, it's been a while since I've crashed a car. But I think that it was good, you know, to an extent for me to learn, you know, like to know in myself, hey, I was pushing, and to realize why the mistake happened. But, you know, more so, I think the standout for me of the weekend was how much, you know, Ed Carpenter was involved in the whole thing. You know, he was on the pit box for every single time I was in the car. watching very closely. And, you know, he even had a radio, so he knew it was happening. He never said anything on the radio, but I think he'd like to in the future. But, you know, I think it's really, really, for me, it's really nice to see, you know, how much he's involved and how much he's paying attention and how he's trying to help. And obviously, I went over to them throughout the weekend, you know, occasionally when I had time after I was done for the day. And I even, you know, I'm trying to, anytime I'm at the track, I'm going to watch the IndyCar races with them from the pit wall.
Yep.
So, you know, I watched the race from the pit wall with them and had a radio and, but you know, for me, it's really positive to see how much, you know, he's involved and, you know, really that he's on board with the whole idea. And not that it's just, you know, kind of a signing and just to have the namesake, you know, it's a real development deal and he's really contributing. And so that's really positive for me. And yeah, I'm really appreciative to Ed and the whole team, you know, everyone there for giving me the chance and the opportunity to help me develop and, you know, ultimately giving me a safe route into IndyCar.
Awesome. Yeah. I was wondering how involved the team would be, but all right, I've got two questions left. I'm going to put you on the spot with one here in a somewhat non-racing question. So we have a Pit Lane Parlay driver Spotify playlist. You get to pick any song that you want to listen to, like pre-race or post-race or maybe in a sports car. I know that's, you know, probably not your best idea, but you know, what are you picking?
Well, I frequently listen to music on the sim, actually.
Okay.
So it wouldn't be that weird to listen to music in the car. I know a lot of people always tell me they're like, oh, that's such a bad idea. But when you do it on the sim enough, you know, I think it was Daniel.
Get used to it.
He'd actually like to listen to it in the car as well.
Okay. All right.
You get used to it. It's kind of more like a background thing. You know, yeah. A lot of people study to music as well. So, and it can be anything, but, you know, I have a lot of, I've listened to a lot of classic rock kind of like some Metallica here and there, but I really just like guitar music in general.
All right, so we will go with Metallica.
I do have one specific song for you, though.
All right, let's go for it.
I would go with Goat by Polyphia.
Nice. It's the top one in there. I will add it to the playlist. Where is the playlist? Okay. Well, while I find the playlist, I will add it in there. And then maybe for once I'll actually tweet out the link to this because I keep forgetting every time I've talked to people in the last couple of weeks to post it. But so wrapping up here, this is, might be a tough question, might be really easy. You're going to look at your WEC schedule and you're going to look at your Indy Next schedule. If you could drive one of the Indy Next tracks in a WEC car and one of the WEC tracks in an Indy Next car, where are you taking your car or cars, I guess?
That is a really... That's a really good question, actually. I think the obvious one for me in the Indy Next car where I'd like to take it in Europe would have to be here in Spa.
Okay. Yep. Yep.
This is probably my favorite track in Europe. You know, Spa has this amazing atmosphere. It's such a unique course with lots of, you know, challenging turns and obviously, you know, Arruge and Radeon is so famous and it's honestly a blast to drive. So I would have to take it here. But the other way around is really, really interesting. Where would I want to take? I'm going to say I haven't driven this track yet, but I'm very excited to get onto it because the layout and seeing the onboards, it's probably one of my favorite street circuits visually. So I'm going to say I would love to take the P2 car to Nashville.
That's as soon as you said street course, I'm like, he's going to say Nashville.
Yeah.
Good choice, though. All right. Well, we'll wrap it there. Again, man, thank you for, you know, the time this afternoon. Best of luck throughout the season. I'm sure I'll see you at the track soon. But yeah, good luck, man. And thanks a lot for the time.
No worries. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.